Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6:55 Irish Summertime. Today is August 31st. This being the last, well, this being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And it being the end of August, I think a lot of people will be happy to see the end of this month, because if every month was like August, then I don't think careers in the financial markets would be particularly lengthy. This has been quite traumatic for the vast majority of investors. There is light at the end of the tunnel. Over the last week, we've seen a number of indices consolidating and some very positive action, particularly today, which saw quite a few, particularly European indices, breaking upwards from little consolidations above those climactic lows that we saw, it must be nearly 2 weeks ago at this point. So that is definitely something that is well worth keeping an eye on there. But getting back to what's been happening this week, stock markets have rallied well, and we've seen bond markets, they haven't rallied nearly as much as stock markets. They've been relatively steady, but still very much on an upward trajectory, excuse me. The precious metals have been really quite steady, and today again very positive action. Upward break there on gold, it's up $8, and that is pretty much breaking the downtrend that we've seen over the last 6 weeks. So it's rallied well from 640, and it does look like it's going to go right back up and test, at least test the highs. Over the much longer term, gold is absolutely pregnant with possibilities, but it does need to sustain a move above $700 to reaffirm its overall uptrend. Silver also has had a good day. Today it's up 27 cents. It's over that $12 mark. It had rallied well from, I think the bottom was at 1106, and then it had consolidated beneath $12. Today sees punching through there, and that's a nice little upward break there. Platinum has been battling upwards. It's up 1150 in here today. That's a little bit off the highs, but it had been one of the hardest hit of the precious metals, and it does appear to have bottomed as well. Then, looking at some of the other commodities, oil, very strong this week. It's up to $74.19 as I speak. So, given the fact that back at Monday it was hovering around $70, quite a large change in here, and certainly finding support around the $70 level. Natural gas is still quite weak. It's down to 5.57. Now this is cheap natural gas down here, but there's lots of the stuff around, and it is going to, I think, need some sort of weather event to really push this thing upwards out of its base, and that may not be this year. Although there is rumors that there is another tropical depression forming out in the Atlantic, but we will have to see what happens with that one. Looking at nickel. Nickel's up 1,500 points in here today. It's at 29,800. Was over 30,000 briefly today, but it has certainly found support around 25,000, and as long as it holds above that level, I think we can give the upside the benefit of the doubt. And copper also had a good day, and pretty much a good week all in all. It was up $6.30 today. That's up to $340. So a number of the precious metals looking much better, and commodities generally looking a bit stronger. Wheat in particular continues to make new highs, and that one really does have the wind behind it in here. Then also looking at the currency sector, the dollar had been quite a bit weaker in here today, but it has rallied and is pretty much flat against the euro as I speak. The pound was a little bit stronger. It's up 49 ticks. It's above that $2 level. Had a good day, I think it was Wednesday, which pushed it back above $2, and it's certainly holding on to that gain right now. And that's pretty much it for what's been happening this week. There are a number of news stories that are of note that have happened today that are really worthy of mention, excuse me. I'll just read the headlines. Bush pledges help for subprime mortgage borrowers and rejects that it's a bailout. No, it's definitely a bailout, but that's just semantics, really. Bernanke will act as needed to limit impact of US credit market rout. And that's pretty pretty important. I think a lot of people had been looking at what he was going to say at Jackson Hole today. And with him coming out and making cooey noises to the markets, that is very positive. And we will, I think people are going to continue to bet there will be a rate cut in September, either 25, probably 25 basis points, possibly half of 1%. And they are starting to price in further rate cuts down the line. And as long as the, I mean, this is a big injection of liquidity. We've had the lending standards lowered with the cut to the discount rate and various pieces of asset-backed paper being accepted as collateral from various funds. And now that we have President Bush saying that he is going to allow the FHA to underwrite some of these subprime mortgages, it's personally, I think it's a very positive move that the president is making. It's not without a political edge, of course, given that there's an election coming up next year. But the important thing here is that there were millions of people who were at risk of losing their homes. Now, one way or the other, there were liar loans out there, and people were getting money they probably shouldn't have. But I think the onus is certainly with the lending institutions having given out that money in the first place. And the chance of owning a home is probably one of the most important things that people will, one of the biggest steps people will make in their lives. And the fact that you have the administration moving in to support these people, I think is, personally, I think it is quite good. And for the markets, it is going to be a significant boom. The S&P is currently up 1.3%. It's up nearly 19 points. The Dow Jones is up 157. The Nasdaq's up 27. That's all in excess of 1%. Now, of course, we're still 2 hours away from the closing bell. But regardless of where markets close today, the important point here is that markets have rallied very well from the lows that we saw on the 16th of August. And as long as they hold above those lows, we can give the upside the benefit of the doubt. Particularly some of these European indices, they've consolidated really quite well, and they're breaking upwards from little consolidations above those lows. So we're starting to get a higher low above that low that we saw at the climactic ending. And again, that is very positive action. On the S&P particularly, it needs to rally just a little bit more to break out from that progression of lower highs. But personally, I have very little doubt that it's actually going to manage to do that. The VIX index has also fallen back, and it's coming back towards that 20 level. Now, 20 had been the high of that, let's call it a base. And if it pulls back below 20, that would be a further signal that we're really coming towards the end of, well, we certainly, well, it would be a good signal that we've seen the bottom of this correction, and it will be another signal that we're returning to more normal conditions, at least normal for the last 4 or 5 years. Looking at what the long-term potential is of what's happening with the FHA move and lower interest rates. Inflationary pressures have certainly mitigated over the last sort of 6 months to a year, and that is as a result of a number of factors. There's been the tightening of the Fed, which has, I suppose, been on hold for over a year, but that tightening did have a lag. There's also been that pullback that we saw in the oil price, and a number of commodities have also pulled back over the last 6 to 7 months. Now, that's not going to be a permanent factor in inflationary calculations, because we have oil starting to pull back, push back up, and the grains are also starting to perform once again, along with a number of other commodities. But the massive injection of liquidity that we've seen over the last couple of weeks, along with interest rate cuts, are a significant injection of liquidity into markets. And while there is certainly a fear of deflation, and there is some pretty panicky talk of depression, and depression a la the 1930s. And that's certainly not helpful, but what it does serve to show us is that there is a significant threat out there to the economy, and this liquidity should help to mitigate the risks of a recession, and we should be able to muddle through for at least another couple of years before we see any major recessionary risks. Of course, this isn't the first time that liquidity has been pumped into the system, and throughout the Greenspan era, at the helm of the Fed, liquidity has been pumped into the system relentlessly. And any time there's been any kind of financial worry, the market has been absolutely flooded with liquidity. And just on a there was the Mexican peso crisis, the Russian debt default, the Asian financial crisis, then long-term capital management, Y2K, 9/11, and now the latest of these massive injections of liquidity, the 2007 credit crunch or subprime scandal. And that has helped to massively inflate asset prices. And stock markets are one of the first destinations of this liquidity. When we contrast, for example, the Dow Jones or the S&P against what we saw in Japan in 1989. In Japan, they had this massive bubble, everyone knows about it, and they went about pricking the bubble. And they squeezed and they squeezed and they squeezed, and they kept squeezing long after they'd killed it off. And they threw their economy into a downward spiral, which it is only just starting to emerge from over the last couple of years, or the last 3 years. Now, central bankers are not stupid people, and they've done a serious amount of research on the problem that had emanated from the Japanese squeezing too hard. And they decided, following the burst of the Nasdaq bubble and 9/11, that they were not going to fall into that trap, and they cut interest rates aggressively and they flooded the market with liquidity. There is the perception that inflation is something that central bankers can manage, and they tend to be much more afraid of deflation because the Japanese have demonstrated that it is much more difficult to tackle. So they will always veer on the side of inflation, and that is something that they're doing right now. Now, this measure that has been implemented, or that will be implemented over the next couple of months to help rescue some of these people that are at risk of losing their homes, is massively inflationary. Keep pumping that amount of liquidity into the markets and holding it there for a considerable amount of time will also, though, help to support stock markets. And there is every chance that we've seen the low for this correction, and that most stock markets will be able to move upwards and reassert their uptrends. A number of markets are pretty much there already. You've got Hong Kong, it was up 2.13% today, nearly 500 points, and that has broken upwards to a new high. I don't know if it was a new high today, but certainly over the last couple of days, it's made a new high. So that's the first, and the H shares have that definitely was a new high. They're the first markets to make new highs following this correction. Australia is only a couple of hundred points from its high. Finland also quite close. Denmark more than halfway up there. And we can expect more markets to get into to join that club over the coming weeks. On the other hand, there isn't a single market in the world that is making new lows. And while the degree to which the liquidity can influence the market decreases the more liquidity you add, we certainly know that investor confidence has been supported by the actions of the Treasury, the administration, and the Fed in the USA. So going forward, I think we can expect the markets to help to reassert their uptrends. Longer term, the U.S. Wall Street is in a secular bear market in terms of earnings, and we define that as a generational long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to see Wall Street making new highs, but we have seen over the last 5 years valuations contracting quite considerably. Now, over the last year, we've seen PEs expanding once more. But when we look at it in terms of asset classes, the chances are, or not asset classes, but sectors, the chances are that, for example, the Nasdaq is not going to get back towards its high anytime before Japan gets back towards its high, because that bubble only pricked 5 years ago. Japan pricked over 20 years ago. Well, almost 20 years ago, excuse me. So the chances of Japan entering a longer term bull market are much better than those for the Nasdaq. But the defining difference there is going to be the amount of liquidity pumped into markets. The Nasdaq is performing very well right now, and given the amount of liquidity going into the markets, it should continue to do well. But other markets are going to outperform considerably better. And at the moment, that's definitely Hong Kong and China-related shares. But a number of other Asian markets are also appreciating very quickly. And because Asia is the growth center of the world right now in terms of GDP, but also in terms of population, in terms of capital market growth, in terms of the infrastructure growth, the increasing commodity consumption, Asia is leading the world. And that is a secular move. We can expect that to continue for decades to come. I saw a statistic recently saying that by 2020, half of everyone in India will be under the age of 25. So when we talk about the scale of infrastructure that India has to build between now and then, it is simply mind-boggling, and it definitely rivals what China has already completed. That implies that the demand for physical commodities is going to grow and grow and grow as per capita consumption in these massive emerging economies even begins to approximate what is seen in reasonably developed economies such as Korea or Taiwan. That is going to represent multiples of global demand for commodities that we see today. And getting this stuff out of the ground for the most part is really quite difficult. Industrial metals have been through a bear market which lasted for 20 years, and they have a dearth of people who know how to do it best because the vast majority of graduates went into the financial sector. It certainly wasn't sexy to tell people that you were a geologist over the last 20 years, but the chances are that by 20 years from now, there will be considerably more people studying these subjects. Looking forward, we can expect that demand is going to increase. Supply will certainly increase, but the chances are that it's not going to be able to keep pace with significant demand. Obviously, there is going to be a significant drive towards substitution as time goes by and commodity prices go up, but that does rely on technological advances which have yet to be made. So, Asia not only has the massive populations that are growing and entering the global consumer economy, but they have the potential to also be the growth centers of global GDP growth for decades to come. And that is why supply and elasticity meets rising demand. That's the commodity sector primarily, is one of our main investment themes for the next decade and onwards. And emerging Asia is also one of our very big themes. The third theme is inflationary, because with commodity prices going up and demand for physical resources, including all of the commodities, and particularly foodstuffs, which is only really just beginning. This is inflationary. And given the amount of liquidity that is going into the economy, or going into the global economy, that is pumping up the supply of money. But you also have the enormous demand for commodities going forward, which is also pressuring the value of money. And that is a secular theme. So while we are now at a point where inflation is not so much of a problem, that will certainly not be the case going forward. And whereas we may see interest rates falling, they're certainly not going to fall back towards levels that we saw in 2002, 2003. Interest rates in the US are not going to get back to 1%. If they get back to 4%, that will be a very big move. And when they start to rise again, they are going to get above this 5.25 level that we are at right now. This is going to be a very gradual theme, and inflationary pressures will wax and wane over time, and there will be many cycles of inflationary pressures within the secular uptrend. Government bond yields bottomed in 2003. They'd been in a 20-year bear market for yields, and they bottomed and are now at the beginning of a new secular uptrend. Yields will probably come back a bit over the next year, as if we do see interest rates being cut. But this is a 20 to 25-year secular market, and we are going to see higher interest rates and higher government bond yields in the future. Personally, I wouldn't be buying bonds right now. The time to be buying bonds is going to be when yields are in double digits, and that could be decades from where we are right now. Given the amount of liquidity that's been pumped into the markets, Asian equities are probably going to outperform, followed by commodity-based economies, those economies that are providing those big growth centers in China and India and emerging Asia and the Middle East with the commodities that they don't have themselves. So this is also a secular bull market for countries like Australia, Canada, New Zealand, Brazil, Chile. And subject to governance, these should all do extremely well. Obviously, you'd have to give the advantage to liberal democracies. But we have seen over the last couple of years that these commodity-based economies can do very well. And of course, the commodity-based economies doing very well also puts upward pressure on the commodity currencies. Just as an aside, Brazil is up 3% today. That was one of the markets that had fallen probably most aggressively, but has also rallied back most strongly. It's up to 54,480, well worth a look in the chart library. But commodity currencies are also on a secular path. It's very difficult for a country that has very large capital account surpluses to control the value of its currency, particularly when there is such demand for high yield, and this will turn into, and the commodity cycle is really still in the relatively early stages. And as demand for physical assets grows, there will be continued upward pressure on commodity currencies. But in the world of globalization, there is no country wants a strong currency or is willing to tolerate a strong currency for particularly long. It will be easier for commodity currencies because they will have a competitive advantage, and because they have pricing power in the ex in their exports and not too much competition. In the reserve currencies, we see significant pressure. I mean, if you were to look at the fundamentals of the dollar right now, you could be inclined to just write it off entirely. But the dollar has been quite steady around this 80 level on the dollar index. There haven't been any upward dynamics or downward dynamics, and there hasn't been any major pressure on the currency. Right. In fact, obviously, it rallied during the actual decline into the bottom that we saw 2 weeks ago. But it hasn't weakened particularly much over the last couple of weeks, and it hasn't trended very well over the last sort of year or so. It's been pretty rangy. And relative to the dollar, sorry, d relative to the euro or the pound, it has weakened pretty much, not, excuse me, it has weakened not very much over the last year or so. Given the pressure that could have been brought to bear, you have to conclude that there is sort of a competitive devaluation of currencies across the reserve currencies of the world, because none of these big economies want to have a strong currency beyond the very short term. So, with M3 being pumped into the system, I think in the Eurozone at 400% over what GDP growth is, that's a massive injection of liquidity, but it's also an attempt to keep the value of the euro relatively low against the dollar. Now, obviously, the euro is trending against the dollar right now, but if that were to start to accelerate, we would almost certainly see some sort of intervention by the various central banks. I don't think we're in a situation like that right now, but if we see the dollar really collapsing, and I'm certainly not predicting that. I'm definitely not in the dollar collapse camp. I think it's going to be managed lower by the Treasury. And regardless of whether they say that there is a strong dollar policy or not, there isn't a strong dollar policy. What we can also expect is if you want to trade currencies, the secular moves are probably going to be in those Asian currencies, followed by the commodity currencies, because China devalued its currency considerably in the last 15 years and is only really beginning to start to let it appreciate once more. And as the yuan appreciates, that also takes pressure off of some of the other Asian currencies who compete with China for exports. And when you look at the dollar, the Asian dollar index, that's on a secular upward trend. So with Asian currencies appreciating and Asia itself being a center for growth and stock market appreciate PE expansion over the coming decades, that's a significant boon to investors because you get paid by the stock market and you benefit from the appreciating currencies. And that is certainly something to keep in mind. Obviously, with the amount of growth that we're seeing in per capita usage of various commodities, that has major implications for the usage of oil. Because right now in the West, we use the vast majority of oil that's pumped out of the ground across the world. But that is where we are finding increasing competition for that oil. And as car usage grows as people move into centrally heated housing or centrally air-conditioned housing in many parts of the world, as people have get much greater amounts of consumer goods, that puts a lot of pressure on the oil price. And because oil cannot be recycled, once it's burnt, it's gone. That means that there's going to be significant upward pressure on oil. Not to mention the fact that on the supply side, if we haven't already reached it, we are reaching a peak in the production of cheap oil. We're never going to run out of oil. There will always be oil in the world. The cost at which it can be brought out of the ground and brought to market will certainly increase over time. And that is something to keep at the back of our minds because oil is in a secular upward path, which is also inflationary. Gold has rallied extremely well from its lows that we saw 3 years ago. It is currently in a consolidation, but it is a historical store of value and it is a historical hedge against inflation, as is oil, or oil will be as time goes by. And it looks to be in a consolidation right now, and once it gets above that $700 level, I think the sky is the limit once more. But it hasn't done that quite yet. The other major theme that is growing in importance, to coin a phrase, or to, pardon the pun, excuse me, are the grains and soft commodities. The first thing that someone does when their standard of living improves is that they improve their diet. And the per capita consumption of meats and grains is increasing across Asia, and we can expect not only their consumption to increase, but waistlines to increase right across Asia and Africa, for that matter, going forward. However, the production of grains is going on at capacity right now, and the stockpiles of grains are at all-time lows, or historic lows over the last 10 years at least, regardless of the fact that we've actually had very successful growing seasons. Now, when we get a bad growing season that hits a significant area of the world that is producing corn or wheat or soybeans, that's going to have a significant effect on the price of these commodities. We're seeing something like that right now in wheat. Droughts have damaged wheat crops in Australia and in the Ukraine, and there simply isn't enough of the stuff around until winter wheat crops are harvested in the southern hemisphere in a couple of months' time, and that is fueling an accelerating uptrend in wheat today. But that is only one commodity, and when one of the major ones, like soybeans or corn, falls into the same position, that is certainly going to be inflationary. Also, given the fact that as per capita consumption increases, it's going to be increasingly difficult to grow enough of crops to feed people. I have great confidence in the ability of our scientists to solve this problem, but with technology as it is today, this is a source of concern for the supply-demand dynamic, and the chances are that we're going to see significantly higher grain prices going forward. In historical or inflation-adjusted terms, they are significantly lower than what they have been in the past, and really only starting to break upwards from a base now, although wheat is making new nominal highs. And when we look at the potential for these soft commodities to appreciate, it is really quite considerable. And with that rather scary theme, I will leave you for the weekend, and I hope you have an enjoyable one. And thank you for your time.